Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine.
Plus global business, finance, and tech news.
The Bloomberg Business Week podcast with Carol Messer and Tim Stenebeck from Bloomberg Radio.
Well, Amazon shares hitting their first record since 2021. Amazon CEO Andy Jassy out with a new letter that said his company's cloud infrastructure will become an essential part of the Gen AI boom. He also said, Carol, that AI may be the largest tech transformation since the cloud. He should know a thing or two about the cloud.
Who?
Because Andy Jassy.
Yeah.
Came from AWS, of course. I mean, this is
Absolutely.
The guy who created AWS. And that the societal and business benefit from Gen AI will astound us all.
Let's get to it with Spencer Soper, Bloomberg News Tech Technology and e-commerce reporter, and he was up early out there in Seattle covering it all, including the latest missive from the Amazon CEO. Hey, Spencer, always good to check in with you. So what do we know, what do we need to know about this annual letter from Jassy?
They get longer every year.
Sorry. Well said.
Love it.
He's up to 5,500 words.
But who's counting?
This year from 5,000 the previous year and 4,500 the year before that.
So. He's like taking a cue from Jamie Dimon, I think.
That's because it costs nothing in the cloud for him to put him up there, right? He can write as much as he wants.
Yeah. I don't know. It was an interesting letter. It certainly doesn't generate as much buzz as his predecessors' annual letters. You know, founder Jeff Bezos, people would really dissect them and look for any clues on where Amazon might be headed, because it was always seen as just kind of being so leading edge. But this one was more like the top really just read like an earnings report, just kind of going through some highlights. And you got to get deep down into the bottom before he starts talking about primitive tools is what he seemed to be highlighting that. And I think what he's really trying to address is this feeling that maybe is like there's a sentiment that maybe Amazon's getting a little bit left behind in the AI race to like Microsoft and Google. And he's trying to really assert like, look, we're going to make the infrastructure that this stuff, you know, thrives on. And he's really trying to draw parallels between their investments in data centers and Amazon Web Services in the cloud with the next wave of AI, and that they're going to be in a good position to, even if they're not out there in front publicly, they're going to be building the tools behind the scenes that anyone working in the space is going to want to use.
Spencer, feels like a 1-2 punch, because last night at the White House, President Biden and Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, a big state dinner, but they also held a press conference, but they are enlisting Amazon and NVIDIA to fund a new joint AI research program. The two nations looking, obviously, to do better when it comes to collaboration around the technology. But it's interesting. Jeff Bezos was at that dinner. You know, it does sound like they're kind of all out there when it comes to AI. I don't know. How do you think about it when you report about this company and kind of its role when it comes to artificial intelligence? It sounds like the cloud. I mean, people are going to need the cloud maybe to, you know, do some of this machine learning and data processing, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, it's all going to be about like speed and efficiency,
right,
and cost. And so when I look at it as a reporter, I try to ignore AI and artificial intelligence just as buzzwords and just figure out, okay, what is it enabling you to do? What did you used to do? How is it done? How has that changed? How are you doing it now? And for the most part, it's really just automating a lot of rote tasks, you know. So, and there's still always going to need that human element to differentiate. Like if everybody's using the same AI tools to do the same things, it's all going to look the same, you know. So it certainly helps in terms of inputs and rote tasks, you know, but it's still going to require that human element and creativity and things that these machines can't do to help people differentiate.
Spencer, I ask everyone this, and I haven't had the chance to ask you this, but, you know, Jassy talked about the societal benefit here. In your reporting, what are the wildest things that are going to benefit society from Gen AI?
I think that just the processing of vast amounts of information is always the thing, and spotting trends and stuff and doing it efficiently, you know, rather than having someone else do it. There's always this kind of framework of math and calculation that has to be done when it comes to breakthroughs. But the more you can delegate that to machines, you know, just the more you can focus on and target your efforts and energy. So I think that's a lot of it, is just, just processing data and that sort of thing to read trends. But in terms of like life-changing breakthroughs, I just, I haven't seen it, you know. I imagine it'll be there and we'll look backward and recognize it. But right now it is hard to, it's hard to see the forest through the trees.
Carol's still waiting for the robot that does dishes.
That's all I'm asking for. Like, kind of figures out what we need to do around the home and just takes care of it.
I'm with you.
I'd like to get rid of my to-do list. Spencer, thank you. So appreciate it. Spencer Soper, he's Bloomberg News technology and e-commerce reporter, joining us out in Seattle, our Seattle bureau. Check him out, though, on X at Spencer Soper.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Listen on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Or watch us live on YouTube.
Well, among our most read stories on the Bloomberg today, it's specifically about Manhattan apartment rents unexpectedly declining in March after months of increases, though it's unlikely to be a sign of a softening market.
The first time in 4 months that rents fell on an annual basis, and an unusual twist at the tail end of winter when prices tend to begin climbing toward their traditional summertime peaks. Carol, our next guest understands the Manhattan residential market, having represented buyers and sellers for more than 30 years.
All right, let's get to our interview. Back with us is Louise Phillips Forbes, real estate broker at Brown Harris Stevens, joining us here in studio. Nice to have you here. How are you? First quarter just wrapped up. How was it for you guys?
Well, not for everybody, but I feel like I'm very blessed in that I had a very strong quarter with 29 transactions and exceeding almost $90 million. And, you know, and it's still coming. I mean, and those rents dropped because people are buying.
How does it compare? I always think about this with, like, the past year, how it compares with the pandemic, how it compares with pre-pandemic.
You know, I think... what I would say to you is that there's only so long people are going to put their life on hold. There were so many individuals that were prevented from buying a home that we kind of had a wonky market in 2018 and part of 19. And 2020 in January was strong, started to be strong. And then we had the pandemic. So not to mention the pandemic, there's also the cause and effect of interest rates and inflation. So people are not going to wait anymore, especially in a vertical market like New York.
So what's happening in your segment right now? Because you have a unique window into what's going on in residential real estate. You certainly do have a diverse clientele, but let's be honest, there are people with lots and lots of money who are buying very expensive properties.
Yes. I mean, literally 1 week in March represented $555 million worth of contract signs. That's 1 week. That is quite powerful. And when you, I said to you just earlier, like, you know something's going on in the market when off-market deals are done for $72 million in the West Village.
So what is going on in the market?
I think that there is a confidence in our economy. I think that, you know, we're not going to have, you know, we have an election year. So you start to hear the rumbles. Like, well, I'm going to wait till after the, I don't think people are going to wait because they're there's so many other circumstances that have prevented people from leaning into this market. So I am expecting this to continue. And my advice to my buyers is don't be late to the party. And you have to start looking for the right home, not the right deal. And if you think with your heart before your head, you will find yourself being an owner instead of paying somebody else's mortgage.
Having said that, right, we all remember like the pandemic, just various properties and multiple bids, especially outside kind of major metropolitan cities. Who's got the upper hand right now? Is it buyers or sellers at this point, Louise?
Well, I think in vertical cities like New York that did not have a collapse in the market, but a pause in the market during, it was a difficult time. I mean, we saw 40% less transactions last year in 2023 when we had people not making decisions for that period of time where interest rates and inflation was doing their dance. But, you know, I will say that we are in a housing market crisis across the nation. Places like, think about Nashville, Austin, Darien, Connecticut. There's seven listings on the market in Darien where compared to 117, you know, 10 years ago. Where are people going? And that's a cause and effect still shaking out from the pandemic where people, that market surged 35%.
Right.
So
is this, but is this the new normal because we're not going back to that era of zero rates anytime soon, at least?
No,
Look, never say never, but all signs point to that's not happening.
I do think that we're going to have interest rates pull back continued to support our economy, but it's not going to be the zero rates. But let's be clear. When you're paying 5 or 7 or 6%, you're making a lot more money in the bank with money in the bank. And when I had a 3% interest rate, I wasn't getting paid but 50 basis points on the money that I had in my bank account. So it all depends on how you choose to look at it.
Right.
And I do think that as interest rates pull back, even if they just go to 5%, prices are going to go up.
We're not there. We've got mortgage rates in the U.S. rising for a second straight week. Average 30-year fixed loan 6.88%, up from 6.82% last week. And it's matching a level reached in early March. Your buyers, so higher rates impact your buyers? Give us, remind us of, you know, sometimes we bring in people and like, they're cash buyers, they're good.
Well, but it forced a lot of cash deals last year because they were the ones that were getting the deals. Cash was always king, but in a market where people are priced out of it, that's why interest rates, with interest rates up, the rental market surged, particularly the one bedroom market. If you're looking to buy $1 million one bedroom and you can afford $5,000 a month for your one bedroom, you're pushing the $3,800 COVID deal out of the rental market because you'll pay $45,000.
But so who is your customer? Like, give us an idea of like a typical, I hate to say that because it's probably
no,
not,
it's
but
okay.
Is there a
it's,
typical transaction that
well,
you do?
I think that the,
or the majority
no,
of deals?
No, I mean, I would say I do from $20 million to $700,000. So I am over the, I'm all over the
what's
gamut.
What's the majority of the deals?
Three to five,
okay,
probably. And all, most of them are taking mortgages. And there was a period of time where people saw the value in buying the rate down and paying $50,000. Interest-only loans are opportunities and choices. People like myself, I'm commission-only. So when I flush $50,000, I can buy down my mortgage and adjust my rate right there in real time.
Right.
Hey, speaking of commissions, got to ask about the National Association of Realtors and the settlement reached last month. What does that do to... You're a business person. You're an independent contractor. I mean, commissions is how you make money. Does that affect the way you're getting paid?
Well, we markets like New York are not quite like the MLS outside and across the nation, how that works. But, you know, look, I think it's all a matter of transparency about educating and talking. And listen, I believe that it's very important for people to understand who they represent and that what their choices are. And I will be that person till I'm in my grave telling people the value that I'm supposed to be bringing to the table. And people have historically never had a problem with paying for that. I think it's really just about the transparency. I'm not quite sure how the cause and effect is going to be. We are proactively starting to talk to all of our relationships because they need to understand this is a change that's probably coming down to the pipe to us. I don't think it's going to affect us the same way it will outside of the city, but that's still part of the arm of our company.
10 seconds on pricing. Prices going up?
I think they're still strong, yes.
Okay. They're still strong. So they're still going up?
I think that there are pockets of opportunity.
Okay.
And it depends on how long they've been on the market and if sellers will allow the brokers to price their homes instead of themselves. and pricing from yesterday, they're going to make those transactions.
A great snapshot, as always. Louise Phillips Forbes, real estate broker at Brown Harris Stevens, of course, joining us in studio.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do, that's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Listen live each weekday starting at 2 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Well, big deal this week. Blackstone struck a roughly $10 billion deal for an apartment landlord in the latest sign that the real estate investor sees a ripe moment to pour money into the property market.
And in February, Bloomberg reporting on Pretium, the largest single-family landlord in the U.S., and that it was planning new housing bets on apartment properties. The firm also recently sold a stake to Hunter Point Capital as it seeks financial muscle for new initiatives.
We knew we wanted to know more. So with more on what Pretium is up to, back with us is Roberta Goss. She's Senior Managing Director, Head of the Bank Loan and CLO Platform at Pretium. She's joining us here in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio. By the way, Pretium has some $51.8 billion in assets under management. You know them. They're focused on U.S. residential real estate, residential credit, and corporate credit. So, all right, we laid it out there. How are you?
Great. We've been really busy.
Well, tell us about that. What does that mean for you and what specifically?
So as a firm, we've been very focused on what opportunities are coming and through the dislocation that we really see as a result of regional banks pulling back. And I think that speaks to the strategic investments we've made and the fact that we really think we're going to be extending into new areas. In single family rental, we're extending now into multifamily with the acquisition of BH, which is unique for us and terrific. And then on the resi debt side, we think also a potential big opportunity as we move forward. So extending from resi mortgages into commercial debt, where we think there'll be a dislocation opportunity.
What does that dislocation look like?
So really more on the commercial side and focused on really the senior levels of debt within within commercial real estate.
Well, what kind of deals are getting done? So like walk us through some of the financial structures that we're seeing. And I know it's hard to kind of jump everything in a big bucket, but give us an idea. I guess what we're trying to do is, right, the deals tell us to some extent who's in the driver's seat or how much someone coming off of the concerns, the woes, if you will, of the regional banking sector and how other people have come in. But I'm curious about what kind of deals then are being done.
Yeah. So for us, it's really opportunities in multifamily coming from you know, ownership of properties that need to be refinanced. So
under pressure, under duress?
I would say not yet, but we're expecting more duress as we go through the next couple of years. So refinancing opportunities and the need for new sources, and I think this will move from the banks to more private debt and private asset management opportunities.
You mentioned the opportunities arising in the wake of the stress on regional banks, specifically what we saw in March of last year. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you think the stress on regional banks is over.
I think that's really hard to call. I'd say, when we looked at Silicon Valley Bank a year ago, you would have said, okay, that was a unique situation. We've seen other banks, have to pull back and shore up capital over the course of the last year. So I think it's very difficult to call. I think, we're just believe that there's a broader opportunity as the regional banks, over the next 5 to 10 years really start to shrink.
To retrench also in terms of, it's interesting because I know Bloomberg, and I think it was our Patrick Clark reported back in February, how you guys were extending credit to home builders because of the void that was created by the regional banks as they were retreating back. How would you kind of characterize that level of activity? You said you're very busy. Give us an idea exponentially, like in the last 6 months or something, how much it's increased.
Well, I think from our perspective in terms of being really busy, we've positioned ourselves strategically to be set up for all of these opportunities.
Whoever needs it.
Right. We had been very active with the home builders now for a couple of years. And
You guys did well off the great financial crisis, right, when it came to residential.
Yes. Saw opportunities. So Don started the firm in 2012 really as a... with a view that there was a structural shortage of homes in the United States. Right. And that has...
Don Mullen, your founder.
The founder, Don Mullen. And that really hasn't resolved. It's probably become more amplified as we go, over the last decade, 12 years. And we think that that's still an opportunity and going to continue to be one.
So you don't think that will get resolved anytime soon?
The structural
shortage. Yeah, and the reason I ask is because there are some folks out there who are arguing, it's getting so bad that we're starting to see actual zoning changes in some towns and municipalities, which, when it comes to people who fight these sorts of things, they're starting to give in some areas because they realize that the housing crisis is so bad.
Well, I think that what we're trying to do is solve for this mm-hmm. Problem. And I think our relationship with the home builders really goes to that. We're trying to, fix what we think is, a nationwide issue and partner with the right either municipalities or home builders or financial partners that are trying to solve for this shortage.
I wonder too, Roberta, are there certain geographic areas where you guys are finding more opportunities than elsewhere?
Well, we've been almost exclusively focused on the Sun Belt. And that has been...
Everybody loves the Sun Belt.
Yeah. So from, Arizona through to Florida. And
you're going to stay there or...
I think for now, that's where our resources are really concentrated. And I think through COVID, we've seen a lot of migration to those areas.
I have three family members, two though, like just before COVID and then another one after COVID. But
don't even think about it.
No, not yet. I kind of like the East Coast. I like Northeast a lot.
What about the flip side of that question? Is areas that you see yourself avoiding over the next few years?
Within our three businesses, which are single family rental, we're extending into multi, and resi mortgage debt, we're extending into commercial real estate debt. And then in my business, which is corporate credit, I think probably one of the stronger of the three this year in leveraged loans. Mm. We think that there's just opportunity to grow within those three businesses. So it'll be natural extensions, but probably not new businesses.
We'd be remiss, and we'd like to, because you guys have a great vantage point on kind of stuff that's going on in the economy. And here we are debating, what the Fed's going to do with the economic reports. Just got about a minute left here. How would you describe kind of the business environment, the investment environment?
So I would say in my world, which is leverage loans and corporate credit, it has been incredibly strong all year.
Which would, to me, say strength, because if there's stress in the markets, that's not going to be there.
Right. It's not going to be. It hasn't been in corporate credit.
Right.
Even though we've seen some elevation in defaults, nothing close to the levels we were seeing in the GFC.
And we don't get there?
No, we don't believe that we'll get back to GFC levels. We'll sort of sit, last year defaults were in the just below 4%. We'll sit at that level this year.
But nothing like a downturn, a recession? Forgive me, just got about 25 seconds.
No, we believe that corporate credit's going to continue to perform fairly strong this year. And elevated rates are good for leveraged loans because we're a floating rate product.
Right. And it does look like you guys are looking to do more deals and put more money to work. Roberta, thank you.
Thank you.
So appreciate it. Roberta Goss, Senior Managing Director, Head of the Bank Loan and CLO Platform over at Pretium.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
Yeah, how about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
Keep driving you crazy.
It's the question that drives us.
You drive me crazy.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody, just about 18 minutes left in today's trading session. Getting ready to wrap up the Friday trade. We just heard from Charlie. We definitely have a rally underway when it comes to the equity trade. In fact, we're seeing some buying here, certainly on the NASDAQ 100, looking at it now up about 1.8%. So interesting to see the interest in activity.
Okay, so we may be seeing some buying, but over on the yield curve, things look a little different, Carol. The 10-year yield, moving higher right now by 2 basis points, up at 4.56%.
Yeah, we talked about, right? This is, it looks like the new reality, the new level, certainly, when it comes to the 10-year. Hey, let's see what Kathy Jones has to say about all of this. We've got a great voice on all of it as we drive to the close on this Thursday. She is Managing Director, Chief Fixed Income Strategist at the Schwab Center for Financial Research. So, Kathy, an interesting week again, coming off a second inflation print, but it really was CPI that, made us change our tune again in terms of rate expectations and what the Fed might do. How are you seeing it? What do you think is the reality when it comes to the U.S. Treasury curve? What are you looking at?
Well, expectations changed on the CPI number. It's sort of interesting now we're carrying it out to 2 and 3 decimal points to try to determine, where we're going on inflation. I don't think the reality has changed dramatically. We know the Fed doesn't target CPI as its major benchmark. It's core PCE. And we had some decent numbers on PPI today that feed in more closely to that core metric, that core PCE. So we may get a little bit of relief when those numbers come out down the road. But I think the big question is, is the Fed going to cut this year? If so, how many rate cuts are realistic to expect? And since the mandate that they have dictates that they need confidence that they're getting to 2%, doesn't look like these numbers are giving them confidence. You know, the economy has been resilient. We have pockets of inflation still burbling up, not getting as much traction in the decline in inflation. So we're probably looking at 2 rate cuts this year instead of 3. I still think that there will be rate cuts. I don't think the talk of hiking makes a lot of sense. But
why does the Fed need to, Kathy, why does the Fed need to cut rates if we still have an economy where it feels like growth expectations are moving up? We just talked with our Gina Martin Adams about earnings, and you know, she's looking for, or estimates are for, decent earnings growth again for the second quarter, or for the quarter that we just finished. So, I mean, where is the weakness that the Fed needs to maybe hedge against, if you will, in the U.S. economy?
Yeah, I don't think it's so much as they're hedging against weakness in the economy, although there's pockets of softness that are showing up when you look at delinquencies on credit cards and car loans and things like that. But I think it's more normalization, right? 5.5% Fed funds when you effectively have inflation running at, let's call it 2.5 to 3, that's a high real interest rate. Can the economy continue with a high real interest rate for a while? But you're definitely seeing pockets of weakness showing up, and their goal is not to tip the economy into recession or to stress it so much just to get inflation down. So I think it's a waiting game, but I don't think the destination is all that different. The direction of travel is still down. It's just a much longer time to get to the destination. The destination may be higher than in the past.
Not if still, but just when.
I'm wondering, Kathy, about what your outlook for rates is for the remainder of the year here. I mean, I think a lot of people would have said, okay, I think we're kind of done seeing, you know, 4.55% on the 10-year a couple months ago. That turned out not to be the case, with yields hitting their highest today on the 10-year than they've hit since November. How much higher do you think they could go this year, or at least this cycle?
Yeah, it certainly looks like we could test 475, 480 again. That was sort of a stopping point. That's not my base case scenario, but it is a possibility. I think as we get down the road, you know, we'll focus in on some of the better news on inflation rather than the worst news on inflation. But you can't rule it out. I don't think we're going back to that 502 high that we saw a year ago, or close to a year ago, but you can't rule out another push up here at 475, 480 until we really get a grasp of, you know, where is Fed policy going? Has inflation actually stalled out? I don't think any of those things, I don't think it's stalled out. I think it continues to go lower, but, you know, we have to test the thesis.
Why are we up today on the equity side of things? I don't usually like to do day to day, but I don't know. I think it's kind of an
interesting trade. She's fixed income strategist. Okay.
All right. That's fine. Well, what do you think? Well,
you can still feel free to answer.
You're smart. You watch the markets. It's all connected, and they, you know, we get that. So why is it based on, if we were at 4.5%, is it just potentially equity investors like, yeah, I can live with this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the equity strategist, but I think you can look. You're just talking about corporate profits. They hit a new all-time high in the last quarter. They're expected to continue to grow. That should be the driving force behind the equity market, is those earnings. So if those earnings continue to look good, I imagine people will pile back into equities.
Okay, I'm getting some questions from some listeners and viewers here. Is there a perpetual demand for yield and fixed income if no cuts come?
Yeah, I think so. I think one of the things that hasn't been focused on very much is how tremendous the demand has been for fixed income since rates went up, since the Fed hiked rates. We've had, you know, very strong inflows. The foreign capital continues to come in, but so domestically, you know, we were yield starved for a decade. And now people look at 5%, 4.5%, 5%. On relatively low risk assets, and they say, yes, I'll take that. You know, especially if you're trying to plan for the future, if you're trying to generate a paycheck in retirement, all those things, you know, that's where the demand for fixed income is, and it keeps coming in.
Well, that's interesting. I was listening, I think it was on Surveillance this morning, with Tom and the gang, and I just think they were talking about one of their guests, like this idea that if you are near or thinking about retirement, locking in on the fixed income side of things, on the U.S. Treasury, like, this is not so bad. Why not do it and take risk off the table? Like, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, locking in 5% on for the next 2 years. That's not bad.
Right.
Yeah, or you could even look at investment. Yeah, or investment grade corporate bonds, which have a high ratings, generally very low default rate. Those yields are 5.5% for you can go out 5 to 7 years. I mean, if you want to have a 5% yield, you don't have to sit in the short end. You can move out the curve and not take a lot of risk to get it.
All right. Going to leave it on that note. Hey, listen, thank you so much. Kathy Jones, Managing Director, Chief Fixed Income Strategist over at the Schwab Center for Financial Research, joining us from Miami.
This is the Bloomberg Business Week podcast.
Available on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Listen live weekday afternoons from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern.
On Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, TuneIn, and the Bloomberg Business app.
You can also watch us live every weekday on YouTube and always on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch stratacoaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.